Hi, my name is Kat. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kat.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for being here, opening the doors. Thank you, Bill, for asking me to come share my experience and help. I'm grateful to do that. So my sobriety date is 297. I don't know whether to look here or look out there. It's definitely different. My sobriety date is 297, so I'm coming up on birthday, and I'm grateful to be of service, and the evidence of that gratitude is most of the time I say yes when I'm asked to do something or asked to be of service someone. My story is not fantastical or much different than what I've heard of in the room. I can tell you that I'm a really prolific plagiarist. All the words have been said already, and it's been said very beautifully. And, that's one of the things I learned in this program is that I had a lot of stuff going on inside of my head with no words to it, and a lot of feelings with no words to any of that stuff. And I found those words in Alcoholics Anonymous. A little bit about what it was like before I had a drink. And my first drink when I was 14 years old, I heard this woman say that she'd been dry for a long time already, and that's absolutely my story. My mom escaped my dad when she was pregnant with me. And I was thinking about the fact that fear has been running through my body before it was even my own. And fear has been something that has been really, really, really evident in my life. But I didn't know that. I didn't know that that's what that was. I didn't know that sensation was. I didn't know that why I was angry all the time, why I was controlling, why I acted the way I did, I come from a household where drugs and alcohol were totally normal. We do them. There's no hiding it. There's no discretion. We use them out in the open. And we go to prison behind drugs and alcohol. We walk away from relationships behind drugs and alcohol. So it wasn't a big deal for me. And I took my first drink when I was 14 years old. Like I said, I needed that drink. I needed a solution. And alcohol was that solution for me. I had used things prior to that to change the way I felt. Alcohol was not the first thing I used to change the way I felt. It wasn't the last thing I used to change the way I feel. I can tell you, though, by the time I took my first drink when I was 14 years old, I needed that sense of ease and comfort that came from taking that drink. And I am textbook. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effects produced by alcohol. That paragraph in the doctor's opinion is exactly my story. I felt relief for the very first time. And I was in an uncomfortable situation when I had that first drink, and it wasn't because I was in danger. I was at a slumber party, and I was around another human. And that was very uncomfortable for me. I did not know how to, do that. And I presented really well. I present well, and I'm really just happy that I'm worse than I think, at that point. And I'm 14 years old, and I'm the only one drinking the way that I'm drinking. And what that is like I'm drinking, and I see the end of the bottle, and I drink, and I see the end of the bottle, and then I drink, and I'm the only girl at that slumber party drinking that way. And I can tell you that I have consequences for my first drink. I also... For the very first time, I felt like I could do anything I wanted. I remember specifically, I was at that slumber party, and there was a boy that I had been just had a crush on for years, like stalking probably a little bit. But I would never talk to anyone. I would just never talk to, never, never, never. And he happened to be the neighbor at the slumber party. And for the very first time, all the girls were like, oh my God, Tyler. And everyone thought he was cute, but tonight I was going to talk to him and no one else was going to. That was so out of character for me. Having nerve, standing up for myself was so out of character for me that alcohol allowed me to do that night, I remember. So alcohol is a source of power for me, is what I'm trying to say. Alcohol gave me the power to do something that I was incapable of doing, which is, you know, talk to this guy, or even just say, you know, stand up for myself, or say, in the past I would just say, oh, no, that's me, and you probably will like you more, and you're prettier, you're nicer, blah, blah, blah. So I had consequences from that first drink. I ended up leaving that summer party, going to, you know, I just felt uncomfortable. I didn't feel part of it, so I left. I felt ashamed of my behavior. Shame and alcohol were hand in hand for me. Every time I drank, I would feel shame. Whether it was already there already and alcohol was the thing that sprung it up, or whether just I was just shameful of the way I behaved, because I was from the very first day I drank and, you know, blacked out. And that would carry on for a long time. Every time I drank, I experienced the phenomenon of craving. Once I started, I could not stop. And so my body would just be walking around, living, having a life. I'm at the slumber party, and I don't remember. I'm not even present. So I ended up that night, I left the slumber party because who cares? I don't want to do stuff anyway. I don't want to be present with them anyways. And I ended up at this abandoned house where I used to live, and thinking like, okay, I'm just going to figure it out. I'm going to work in a different way. I'm going to drink, but I'm not going to drink that way. I'm going to do it differently. And I, you know, I've been looking for that relief for a really long time. So I felt very entitled to have that. And so I pursued that. And I'm not a badass. I didn't drink for very long. And really, most of my drinking, I was underage. So I had to have people provide it for me. And, you know, that carried on, and I found ways to drink. One of my biggest ways of getting alcohol was my mom, and I used her to buy me alcohol because she owed me, and because, you know, it was a card that I could lay down. You know, okay, you want to see me? Because, you know, at this point, I'm drinking, I'm estranged from my family. When I drink, I'm estranged from my family because I could do nothing but think about myself and drink. So all my relationships, I let them go. So even at the age of 14, I am separate. I'm estranged. And I didn't know that I was putting alcohol in an alcoholic body, and I didn't know that separation from other human beings was the device I was creating from drinking the way that I was drinking. I didn't know that alcohol was going to provide that separation for me. I just thought that people were getting in my way. People were inconvenient. So I just kept living. I just kept living that way. So I'm just this, you know, selfish, self-destructive creature that's just continually plowing through people's lives, taking from people, getting what I wanted, drinking. I graduated high school. It wasn't really a challenge for me. Had a lot of consequences, a lot of embarrassment, a lot of humiliation. It didn't occur to me that I should stop drinking. I did all the other things, you know, all the other illicit substances as well. And, you know, I did well. I can present well. I graduated. I was asked to do, you know, like my teachers liked me. I was asked to be teacher's aide. You know, like people wanted, you know, people bought in on the story I was telling, the narrative that I was telling, let's just say that. So I went to college, wasn't interested. I knew that was what I was supposed to do. That's what people do. You know, and because alcohol has become such a part of my life, I'm very mechanical in the way that I operate. I just see what other people are doing, and I just fake it. I watch what other people are doing, and I fake it, because I still want to just look like everyone else. I want to look how other people feel. They seem to be happy. They seem to be successful. They seem to be doing it. I just want to get there. So, you know, go to college. Get a job. And so I get a job. It wasn't hard for me. I did well. I learned how to work really hard in that household. My stepdad was in and out of prison, so he was really structured and really disciplined about certain things, which he taught us, you know. I mean, that was one good thing. Like, he knew how to work hard. He didn't treat me like a girl. You know, I learned how to work in the backyard, and I learned how to do stuff, and learned how to do all the things that my brothers did, too. You know, and by the way, you know, my family, there was 11 kids in my family. I was the oldest girl of 11 kids, 8 boys, 3 girls. So there was a lot going on in that household. But, you know, I am in my 20s is when the drinking really started to pick up because I was able to be on my own. And I thought an alcoholic was a person pushing a cart down the street, because I can't identify because I live this way. I grew up in a household. We never called it alcoholism. We never called it drug addiction. No, we didn't call it neglect. We didn't have any of those words. We didn't say any of those things. We just kept living. And so I'm just like, what? And I remember just being so completely unaware, unself-aware, not self-aware, whatever, however you say that. I just was like, what? You know, like, what's the big deal? I never took anything seriously. I was completely indulged by this life. And I had a lot of people throw pillows between me and my falls, me and my consequences, and I think that happened a lot with women. Is that there's always someone there to catch me, there's always someone there to smooth it over, there's always someone there to give me, you know, another chance, help me out, and, you know, is in me a disservice. I was grateful at the time, and you know, I am grateful because I probably wouldn't survive because of those people who helped me. But I never got to really feel the full effect of the consequences of my actions, which allowed me to continue drinking. And it allowed me to think that this was okay, this was a life. You know, when I got into, you know, I did well, like I said. I got off the job, they promoted me. With the backdrop of a successful life, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. With the backdrop of being able to, like, appear a certain way, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. But if you walked into my house, you'd be able to know something was up. Just a disaster. It's not my priority. You look inside my car, I had a nice car. If you open the door, they'll be like, what happened in there? You know, you see the mail stacked up. I can't open my mail. I can't answer my door. I can't answer my phone. I'm so, something's chasing me. I can't even describe it any other way. Like, someone's going to find out. I just live that way. And I don't know what it is. I just know that I'm always just doomed. And I'm always running from something, trying to find something else. Just living from one feel-good to the next feel-good to the next feel-good. And I'm not responsible. I think that's what it is. I have let everything go, and I knew. And so I'm estranged from my family. I'm really not. I'm kind of just paying my bills in a way that I can, like, present well, or keep stuff going, or, you know, keep a household, or do my laundry. So, I get a good job. I get a really good job, and I can't stop drinking. And so this job sends me to a training, for a few months to teach me how to do it. And I make 3 times the amount of money that I was making previously. So instead of drinking pop off, I'm drinking, whatever the expensive vodka is, you know, because I'm drinking vodka at this point. I'm only drinking vodka. I had stepped into Old Grey Goose, whatever. And so I'm drinking more. And, you know, instead of Maybelline Master, I'm buying Christian Dior. And instead of Levi's, I'm buying, you know, all these. I just upped my life. I just, you know, of my life, and I'm thinking that I've arrived, and I'm thinking that everything's going to be okay, everything's going to be good now. The only thing is I'm drinking every day, and I cannot control when I'm blacking out now. Like, I used to be able to be like, okay, I gotta get out of here by the 4th and 5th grade, you know, and backtrack. I had created, you know, this weapon, like the book says, the real story. You know, I forged this weapon that would turn and all but cut me to ribbons. And that's exactly how I felt about my drinking, is that I would have to have a couple tall cans in the shower just to get ready to go out into the world. And, you know, when I'm out in the world and I'm drinking, because it's really the only way I know how to be with people, I'm starting to, like, injure myself. I'm starting not to be able to hide the fact that I'm blacked out. So, you know, I fall down, I get, like, red burns from, like, here to here, or, like, here, and people are like, what? My teeth go through my mouth. You know, I'm just sick. I'm really, really sick, and I can't hide it anymore. And, you know, I get this job. I'm showing up to work, and they're like, you smell like a brewery. Like, what's going on with you? And I'm like, what? You know, because no one's ever called me out on it. And, you know, I met this girl because, you know, I have these, you know, I attract friends that drink the way I drink. I attract people who live the way I live. And so we're in here, we're at this place where we're trying to have this career and have this job and do this training so that we can start this new career. And we're just drinking and driving and doing all this crazy stuff. And, you know, I'm 27 years old. I'm a 27-year-old, 14-year-old girl. With money for the first time and some type of, you know, power for the first time with this new career, and I'm just exhausted. I'm really just exhausted. I can't keep up with my own life. I'm tired of being away from my family. I'm afraid. I started waking up in the pool of my own vomit, like waking up, putting on these, you know, business attire and waking up on the floor. And that had happened a few times before. I'd be like, ooh, that's probably not good. People die that way, you know? And I had such a gigantic ego that I just did not want to go out like that. Oh my God, how embarrassing. Like, I would thank God for that gigantic ego, but I just didn't want to die that way. So I had started, like, secretly looking at things, you know? The guy was seen incredibly sick, like I was. I was gonna say soon that I remembered. I forgot about this, but you know, my body was fighting for its life. You know, my body was. I started to like have alcohol. I mean, I always had alcohol poisoning. Like when I drank, I always had alcohol poisoning. And that, what I mean by that is like I pee the bed, I throw up. Like my body was doing anything to get that alcohol out of my system. And I didn't even know. I had no idea what that's what that was. My body was fighting against me, trying to save my own life, and I was just disrespecting it all the time. And I wasn't an everyday drinker. I was not an everyday drinker. I drank on my Thursday, Friday, Saturday, period, maybe on the beginning of the week, but I thought that me did not make me an alcoholic. I never got a DUI. I always got the job. Like, I didn't know that doesn't matter. Alcohol doesn't care about that. You know, I'm sitting on my friend's couch, and she's actually the one that brought me to this career, and she's like, I can't stop drinking. And I'm like, yeah, you are sick. And I drank what she drank, so I said, she's like, I'm going to stop drinking. I'm like, okay. And she's like, what are you going to do? And she said, I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, thank God I didn't have any, I really didn't have too much information on it, but I said, yeah, okay. And like I said, I had the guy with me. He was like, let's go to church. We're going to go to church. And I had never, ever in my life been attracted to the idea of church. He was like, we need to go to church. And I thought, okay. Like, I had these little mini surrenders to the idea that I needed some kind of help to relieve me of the way I was drinking. But we never went to church. We just said, you need to drink. But it was profound to me, and I knew something was up if I said yes to that. Because quite previous to that, I was, like, not down with that idea. And so I started, like, reading about alcoholism and what it does, you know, like, the stages of it and stuff. And I realized that I fit into those categories. And there's this thing called, I think it's called the Jelinek curve or the cell. I can't remember. Anyways, it's like the progression of alcoholism. And I hit every single marker on there. I did every single thing on that, and I knew at that point that I was alcoholic. I knew. And one of the things was stirring for the desire for God. And that's what was happening to me. That something was happening that was leading me to some kind of spirituality. So I sat on my friend's couch, and she said, she's going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, yes. And at that very moment that I said, yes, I would go with her, the obsession to drink left me. I never had to have a drink after that. And I can tell you that I struggled not to drink for a decade prior to that. I just thought I was a bad person because I always make promises to myself, don't drink, and I always drink. No matter what I did, no matter the circumstances, no matter how dire the need it was for me to not drink that day, I always drink. I let go of so many relationships behind my inability to drink, or inability to stop drinking. And for some reason, when I sat on her couch that day, I didn't have to drink again, and I didn't. And so I went to an AA meeting in Hanford, and it was an old church, And I was angry and I was uncomfortable because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. And I did not want to have to stop. I wanted to drink without consequence. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't. And so I was that person who came in right as the meeting started and leave before you had to touch anyone. And I didn't want to get to know anyone. Everyone was, it was just uncomfortable. It was just uncomfortable. And I was angry and it was your fault. And I hated everyone only slightly less than I hated myself. And my friend that I came in with, she, at about like a month and a half, she got a sponsor. She was with me. And I'm really competitive and I didn't want her to get more sober than me. So I got a sponsor too. And, you know, I picked a woman who, she's going to be speaking here in a couple of weeks, actually. She's speaking on March 13th. And she saved my life. And I needed someone to show me how it was done. And I needed someone to tell me, me too. You know, I did that. I felt that way. That happened to me. And I didn't even know that, that was the process in which I would use to understand and digest this, this book. And so she took me through the steps. And I can tell you that I had very little enthusiasm for my first go around in the steps. I can tell you that I didn't think it was going to work, that I half-assed it, that I was not fearless and searching, and it worked anyway. And I did the steps, which allowed me a brief reprieve from the craziness in my brain, and then I did the steps again. And then I did the steps again. And then I did the steps again. And slowly and surely, things changed for me. And I pulled a geographic and I moved to Fresno from Hanford thinking, you know, and it wasn't very long. This was my first year. And I thought, okay, this is going to be different. I found the one. I'm in love. Surely I cannot mess that up. And I wasn't going to come back to AA. I wasn't really going to. I didn't really want to be in AA. And, you know, this person that I was dating, I didn't know every single one of their friends in the program. Okay, I guess this is happening. I'm doing this. And, you know, I found a family in AA in Fresno, and that relationship went to the wayside because I still wasn't picking people. I mean, I still picked people who drank and used because I didn't know any different. I just thought, that's what we always do. So that didn't work out for me after a while. I didn't want to live in a household that had drugs and alcohol in it. So incrementally throughout the process, I started learning about the steps. And I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about what my experience was with those steps. I know that when I first came in, how much time do I have?
30 seconds.
Okay. So the first part of the first step. So I heard recently, too, and I love this, and I agree with it completely, is that if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take these certain steps, right? So I wanted to be able to say the stuff. People weren't in the room for free. People in the room possess the power. And what that was for me is that they were able to talk about really hard stuff and not be destroyed by it. They were able to tell the truth about themselves and not be embarrassed by it. It had no power over them. And that's what I wanted initially. Willing to go to any length to get it? Like, I wanted to be the best. So luckily, like I said, this gigantic ego saved my life. So I was ready to take the steps. Those are my two little indicators. Now, what I know that means for me right now is I want the freedom that comes from the steps. I want the freedom that comes from living a life that is based on spiritual principles. So honest, open-minded, willing, in service, a fellowship with people, a surrendered sponsor, sponsorable, you know, like all these tools I've learned in the program lead to a really beautiful, free life. Doing it one day at a time, like all those things are tools in my toolbox. All those things are things I did not come in here knowing. So, willing to go to any length to get it. So that's the step. I mean, that's service. That's me passing the message on. That's me allowing God to place another woman in my life to teach me about me. I don't see, and that's kind of what I know about sponsorship is, yes, I am sponsored. My sponsor gives me suggestions. My sponsor guides me to the books. My sponsor holds me accountable. My sponsor is the place that I tell the truth to. And it's a relationship. I sponsor women because I share what was been given to me so that the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous could be open, but also because I don't know what they're going to teach me. It's been my experience in the last 14 years that God places women in my life to teach me about me, because there's some areas of my life I'm resistant, and there's some areas of my life that I cannot open up to because I can't stand them. And God will place some woman in my life, and I'll watch her hate herself over something she did, and it's the exact same thing that I did. I've done that. That's what that looks like. And I'm able to, like, let myself off the hook, and because I'm letting her off the hook, it just works out miraculously that way, and I leave. I like it. It's nice. It's easy. I wanted to say this about the first step, too, is that we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, but our lives have become unmanageable. And in admitting, I needed some kind of honesty. I wasn't able to access that honesty when I got here. I was not able to be honest. I did not like the truth. I did not work in reality. And so I needed to be able to get some kind of honesty to myself before I could admit that alcohol was thriving, that I was just a passenger. I was waiting for alcohol to be done with me, because I just couldn't stop. Alcohol had to be done with me. And this unmanageability portion, I did not... You know, the not opening the mail, the not answering the door, the being a stranger to my family. I thought that was all unmanageable. But, you know, like the place in the book where it talks about the grave of misery and depression. Like, I was absolutely, I felt that way. There's a gigantic void between me and other human beings. I could not be a servant. I didn't have a purpose. I had nothing to live for. And that, kind of what AA has given me. That kind of, definitely what AA has given me. I cultivated a life out of things that I've learned in this room, in the room. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I have experienced insanity in sobriety. When I came in, it was very obvious. There's no question there, definitely insane. Lack of proportion in my life. Also doing the same things over and over again, expecting a different result. I definitely have experienced the insanity prior to doing something really dumb. And I haven't had to take a drink in the last 14 years, but I've relapsed on some dumb shit. And just done some things I know that I shouldn't. And I'm usually insane prior to that. And that's usually because I've drifted away from the things that I know work in my life. Prayer, the meditation, the accountability, the honesty. You know, I've dressed up those white lies. I've made a scarf out of those red flags, and I just pretended like it's going to be okay this time. I can do things with it. I can do that with it. And so I can do it. It's not alcohol, it's not drugs. I can do it with it. And I've had consequences from that. I don't know how many times I can do that without having to take a drink. I don't know how many times I can live that way without having to put a drink in my mouth behind some of my bad behavior. I'm grateful that I've been able to course correct. I'm grateful that there is a higher power in my life that loves me unconditionally that I can draw back to. Usually that's people that are softer than me, that allow me some kind of forgiveness and hope that I can go back to my higher power with that. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. So this is, you know, I had a real issue with the higher power idea. Like I said, I did not want to go to church. I did not like the idea of religion. I struggled with that for the first 5 years. And I didn't realize until about year 5 that I had created the higher power in my own likeness, which was judgmental with myself, over, you know, a judgmental, unrealistic expectations, unrealistic incessant demands. You know, and at about year 5, I had some things happen. There was two things that I said, okay, this and this happened, green light, I'm going to drink. Everyone's going to understand, no big deal. I can't possibly not drink between these two things. And then in year 5, those two things happened, like within a couple months of each other. And I thought, well, you get to drink. And I didn't want to drink, but I was so mad at God. I was so mad at my higher power because I thought, I'm sober. This isn't supposed to happen. I'm a good person. Like, I've done this and I've done that and I'm doing this. And why is this happening to me? How can this happen? And then that's when I realized that, I assumed God judged me. And because I judged me for my behavior and the things that I had done. And, my sponsor walked me through that and I found a higher power that was different than my higher power previously. And I was able to make it through those years. And I was completely unaware that I had those judgments. I was completely unaware of this higher power that I had created. So this man told me when I first walked in, because I was so angry and I was so pissed that I was an alcoholic and I was so venomous about, people would talk about God, and he said, however insufficient your idea of God, even if you feel like you're God's blind spot, that's enough to stay. And I was like, just that little amount? He's like, yeah. And so I did. I opened. It's been a lot of softening for me, and it's been a lot of gentleness for me, and it's been a lot of allowing myself to be loved and loving myself to like aspect of this idea of this God. So step four, the searching and fearless small inventory of ourselves. That's not an issue for me. It's never been an issue. I love to talk about myself. I love to just fill the room up with my words. Obviously, look at things tonight. And so I didn't have an issue with it until I really understood what the process of the inventory is. I have understood since then that whenever I'm doing an inventory, and when I look at that realization that how have I done that to that person or someone else, everything I'm resentful for, I've done to other people. Everything I'm resentful for, I've done either to that person or someone else. And you're not a hypocrite. I'll do it, but I don't want it to be done to me. And, I just really become self-aware of how I expect other people to act and the fact that I make them from that. But also, people are sick. People are suffering the pains of growing up, just like me. I'm no different. I'm not above. I'm not behind. We're all just trying to survive this thing together. Admit to God herself into another human being. I was definitely the one who would come to some realization about myself and then keep it all myself, tell no one. Because I really didn't want to, acknowledging something to someone else means that I might have to take action. I can't bitch and complain about it forever and ever because, or stew about it because someone else knows about it. And there's some personal responsibility I have to take about my own life when it comes to step five. And I get that now. And I've sponsored a lot of women and taken them up to step four and then never saw them again. Never saw them again. And I really understand and really respect that if we skip those steps, that we may not stay sober because of the evidence. I've seen the evidence. I debrief with my sponsor regularly. She knows what's going on with current in my life, and I take my inventory to her, I take my inventory to God, and, a lot of times, it's just been a tool that's worked for me, and once I learned how to, really process and take in that chapter of that part of the book, it was really, really helpful for me, especially when I could see how hypocritical I am when I'm resentful. Step six, we're challenged to have God remove all these defects of character. I'm going to bulk six and seven together. I have this really good knack for making things worse. That's one of my favorite defects of character. I really know how to make a situation worse. And, I've been working on that recently, and I'm in a relationship with, another recovered alcoholic. And so we're trying to live our best life, and it's really painfully evident about my incessant demands. It's really painfully evident about my ridiculous expectations and, you know, the level of expectation I have on myself. And what I understand is that I don't want anything to block my usefulness. I don't want anything to block my relationships with anyone. And I want to work on those things that do that. And they're not evident to me sometimes. Sometimes I have to watch it in someone else. Most of the time I learn about my character defects when I watch someone else, because the indicator is it bothers me. Whatever someone else is doing that irritates me, I take a look at, you know, those irritations are teachers to me. Why is that bothering me? Is it because you do it as well? Usually, 99.9% of the time, I'm bothered by something because there's something inside of me that gets pained. There's something inside of me, and I don't know a better way than to say pain. There's something inside of me that is mirrored, and I don't like it. I gotta take a look at it, and that has been one of the most helpful things that that this program that has taught me. Made a list of all persons we harmed that became willing to make amends to them all, and then made direct amends to such people wherever possible. Wherever. I feel like 7 years, wherever. That's a location.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sucks. Okay. So I went through my list of, when I first did my first amends, I did a lot of those in person. I had a lot of really good experiences. I never had the ability to come back from anything. And I feel like amends allowed me to come back. I would just be like, well, you saw me in a light. I didn't want to see you. Or you saw me act a certain way and that's embarrassing. Now I'm uncomfortable when I'm in the room with you. So, well, I'm never coming back. I would just avoid situations and relationships where anyone saw me in any light that was not anything other than like perfection and excellence. And so that was another reason why I was alone a lot. And AA has allowed me and taught me how to come back from those things. Because really, I don't want to not be with people. Really, I don't want to not be with those relationships. So it's taught me a way to say I was wrong. And I want to come back. Will you allow me to come back? I was never humble enough. I was never small enough to do or say that, anything like that. And I have had a lot of relationships restored because of the amends process. I thought, and I heard someone say recently that that's not necessarily why we do it. I just know that's been an experience for me taking amends. And not only, those people deserve it. You know, really when I'm willing to make amends to someone, it's because I don't think you deserve. For me, when I'm not willing to make amends to someone, it's because I don't think they deserve it, and I still really just kind of want to keep punishing them. I'm very punitive that way. That's another thing that I practice a lot is, you know, that power trip of punishment, that power trip of having that kind of power over someone. But I just don't want to live that way, and people also deserve that kind of freedom. People also deserve that kind of love, too. And that's kind of what's happened in the amends process. And my sponsee do such a really great job of allowing me to come back because I'm harsh sometimes. I'm critical and I'm intolerant. And how are you doing this time?
4 minutes.
4. Oh, wow. Okay. I'm not going to go off the steps. I just want to say that I want to get successful, and that's the step of service. And I definitely want to say that I am grateful for the service that I've been able to do, the sponsorship. I'm also involved in H9, and that has been a gift. And I think that the ability to go in those places and share my experience has been something very powerful that I'm truly grateful for. And I have a deep respect for the people who came in the rooms before me that allowed the doors to be open, and that I want to continue to share the method of Alcoholics Anonymous. The doors can be open for the people that come in behind me, and that's really important. So, that's about it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. So what do we do now? Call?
Right. So now we're starting the discussion portion of the meeting. We'd like
to hear from as many different people as possible. So please limit your sharing to allow for this. You get to pick from, we have online participants. Get out of this. You can pick from the online people, and you can pick from...
Oh, Matt has his hand up. Should we send him one to share?
Okay,
Matt, go.
Hi, everybody. My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic. Good to see you, everybody, and thank you for your share. It was great to hear from you. Part of what you said really hit home with me when you said when you were upset with somebody, something about what they were doing or saying or the way they were being was reflected in you. I have an experience that happened to me, and it was a real eye-opener. I went to a meeting once, and I didn't quite understand the format of the meeting, and I thought, and this fellow got up, I'll short story, this guy got up and shared for 2 hours, and I was blown away. I'd been to meetings before, but I eventually, at the 2-hour mark, I had to excuse myself. I had to get up and leave. I had to get things to do. And I ran into somebody at that meeting, and I said, boy, I just really don't like being lectured like that. He said, oh, that one's easy. So what are you talking about? I was pretty new. He said, well, if you don't like to be lectured, chances are you like to lecture. And if you like to lecture, you think you know a thing or two. And if you think you know a thing or two, chances are there's some arrogance living in you. And if you're arrogant, this means you're not humble. And not humble means separated from your higher power. So if you don't like to be lectured, there's a lack of God in you. I went, what? He said, and we went through that process again. If you like to lecture, short story, you think you know a thing or two, that's arrogant, that's not humble. Not humble is not teachable. If I'm humble, I'm teachable. And if you're not humble, Matt, you're separated from your higher power. And he said, but if you see how convoluted and how problematic that is the solution that convoluted and complicated? I said, I don't know. He said, no. Solution is simple. If you're separated from your higher power and you're not humble, shut up and listen. It's as simple as that. It's one of the best spiritual assets we have, and we're born with it, and we somehow in my disease, I say we, I mean me, somehow in my disease, I have lost the desire and the ability to listen because the committee in my head was so loud and so murderous and so objectioning to everything that I could not think straight. So, at any rate, I want to tell you that I appreciate that you said that something that was highly reflective of a learning experience that I had directly in the program. And I'm going to pull up there. Thanks everybody for being here tonight. You can't be sober. And my name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Peace. Let's hear from the bun on top of your head in the corner, very comfortable.
I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
Carla.
Hi. I'm very grateful for your man. You said a lot of things that resonated with me. And I was thinking back to when I didn't think that I had a problem, and I was, you know, everybody else had a problem. And I used to play the blame game all the time because I didn't want to have to look at myself as the problem. And I remember, oftentimes, I used to avoid conflict with people because I thought that if I spoke up and said I was out, then my addiction would come to the surface. So I tried everything I could to hide that from my own husband for years. And it got to the point where I got tired, you know. And it wasn't until I got sober and let, like, all the skeletons out of my closet that I truly felt happy. And I remember thinking that I suffered with, you know, depression and anxiety so bad. And then once I got sober and my mental state kind of went, you know, stable, I thought to myself, every lie I had to keep up with, every time I had to you know, make excuses for why I was falling asleep on the couch or things like that. That probably gave me the anxiety and the depression of just wanting to be able to be normal, I guess. I saw a lot of people that got into recovery and it's a little envious because I wasn't ready to get help yet, and I had to go to treatment for it because I tried being sober on my own, and I was too powerless over my own self to be able to get sober on my own. So once all the skeletons like came out of my closet and I put everything out there, my mental health took a turn like I didn't expect it to, because for once I was living an honest life and it was peace. It wasn't tiring, it wasn't hard. And I lived that way for almost a decade. You know, that lying and that lifestyle. There were times where I would tell him something and we'd be on the topic again, but I would say something else. If I couldn't to keep up with the lies and remember what you said and who you said it to, it's probably half the reason why a lot of addicts don't sleep. You know, because their mind is going 1,000 miles a minute, just trying to live, you know, that expensive lifestyle for, you know, a road death habit. So, anyway, thank you for your share. I truly enjoyed it.
Thank you, Carly.
Macy, you want to share?
Macy, you have to unmute yourself.
Hi, Macy, alcoholic. Thank you for your shares tonight. I'm mainly just here to listen, but I'm happy it's my 30 days today, so I'm happy about that. And these meetings are a huge, huge reason for that 30 days, so thank you, everybody. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Macy. Angel, sir?
No, I said it.
Okay. Zeke?
Hi, Zico colleague.
Easy.
Thank you for your share. I think it is on a several different levels. I think we just couldn't listen. I got some things I'm processing right now, so it's good to listen.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Z. Bill, are you able to share?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a location breakdown.
Okay, no worries, Bill. Sorry, Hudson.
I'm just here supporting her to see.
Okay.
I'll share. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
okay. Thank you so much for your share. That was great. I just caught on to something different. This morning, we're talking about freedom to steal and freedom from. So, freedom from alcoholism and addiction is freedom from insecurity, freedom from being afraid of people. Freedom from, I really liked hearing about your unmanageability. That was one of my favorite parts of when you discussed the doubt moment, where you spread that way.
Thank you, Erica.
Tomko, do you want to share?
I'm Roxanna.
Hi, Roxanna.
Do you want to share?
I've just been going through some emotions because, you know, like they say, you gotta not just quit the alcohol, you know, and the drugs, but you gotta change yourself, you know, your stinky thinking and be more positive. But I don't know, sometimes it's, I question that too. It kind of gets back in my head, but I don't want to be like that. I don't, like she said, I don't want to be the mean person that, you know, but some things kind of get you, and I kind of, you have to, they be in my head for a while, but I've been dealing with it, but I'm doing well, but I've just been going through that. It's kind of, try to positive, then it goes negative, then positive, then negative, so. Just going through some, understanding of that. But I'm still going strong. I think 10, 11 months sober now. My last drink was April 14th, and I'm happy, a lot happy. It's just these things that just, these past weeks, you know, this, you know, we got to change how we are, you know, our thinking too, and don't let that old way go back. And I'm happy to be here tonight. I kind of had some issues with the internet, but I'm happy to be here and happy to be listening to you guys.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ross.
Okay,
Hi, yes, Charles.
That was a really powerful prayer. Thank you. No one's ever, I have a sponsor I'm supposed to work on, but I have a really good sponsor. She already knows, like last Friday, I called her. She's like, so, you want to get together this weekend? She's also good at pandemic on Saturday. Of course, you know, I go over there a lot. But I do like to see, like, this stuff. But like, Saturday, we'll meet up. Are you working on that? Packet is like a legit packet. It's like 10 sheets. Unreal. But it's good. And she knows me so well, and I'm like, yeah, I'm working on it. She's like, okay, well, I already know you're, fine, I'm going to do it, so I got to set a tension. Because I know you're going to put it off, so, you know. So I'm like, okay, so that's my work this week. I don't really want to get into it, because I already know, like, what that's going to entail. But I appreciate you doing that explanation. That was a lot of times you didn't use this, you're like, oh yeah, hey, I got this. But there's so much. I every day that I wake up, you know, last year at this time, my boyfriend and my partner, who were married, felt we were scared of committing. And I felt like life was amazing, right? Life was good. I was covering quite well, so I appreciate that you said that. I didn't feel like you just put on a presentable face, which is what I think that I have done for many years. One class of office, I was a nurse the last 12 years until October when I got arrested because my partner got given a yearly ultimatum for many, 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 many months. He just got tired of my shit, really. And I never made, like, a call. Like, I never gave myself enough worth or value to even call about, like, checking the rehab, doing anything like that. Life would have just been so much easier. Because the things, like, I didn't want to give up, you know? Like, I didn't want to go to rehab and buy about certain things and give up, like, other things. And I just didn't want to, like, fully commit. So we got into this argument one day, and I threw a paper towel that day, and it just turned into this massive, nasty thing. And the cops called, people called, and I ended up being taken down to Fresno County,
and with two felonies, which I'm still dealing with that right now. But and I feel like it can go on and on and on for months. So essentially, like, I feel like my nursing career is over. And it's like, I'm in a program, I'm in a recovery program, and the nursing board is really good about being like, you know, lots of people get arrested, lots of people on multiple DUIs, you go find a job again, you know, blah, 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 blah. But for me, I just can't imagine, like, going back to that world and, like, just having to face my truth about that. Because I'm going to have to face my truth about that, like, no matter what. Because there's going to be, like, gaps in my career, like, if I go back to work. I'm not really sure where that's all heading. I'm grateful for the recovery program. It's a really long program. I do randomized testing, which is good. But when I look at all of it, I'm just like, I'm literally doing what my ex wanted me to do. And I'm just like, why did you not realize it? Why did you not value like what you had so many years? And Harley, right? You said something last week about like how you were so grateful to be in the position that you're in now because like you couldn't imagine being around the pills in that environment not having a free life. And so I've just been fronted so many years and I'm grateful that I'm here. I don't know like what the future holds. I'm thankfully I'm smart, I can figure it out, all of that's cool. My disability and possibly all these births and disabilities is good here, so I have a lot of time for that, but just, I imagine that I made it 40 years old and 50 years old. Sorry, but it's fine. I mean, that's like the, maybe that's a lie I keep telling myself, it's fine. But I have a fair amount of, I'm not friendship anymore, you know, like I mean, I'm so grateful for you. The relationships that I've developed, the honesty that I've developed, it's so hard, you know, like sitting up and sharing your truth, but kind of like you mentioned, if you don't, if you're not honest about that with yourself, then you're not really going to get anywhere. And so that's for me, like, what I'm grateful for. So it'll work out, I hope, I don't know, but I'm grateful for this, right? And like, I know it's going to be a long, hard road, but I can truly say that like, I don't have the urge to be able to lose anymore. A lot of that is being something I never imagined in all the years, like, every morning that I'm now, and sober, like, what I've gone through. Yeah, I now have, like, my fourth visit with my son. And so that's awesome because I've missed him so much, you know, in the whole process. He's gone from my life for like 3 months, like one day to the next. It's so good. It's hard, you know, like it's hard. So it's hard for all of us to figure this out. Dad has to run and like drop him off, but I can't be near Dad because like it's just a freaking nightmare. But we're working it out, and I'm just. And 2 weeks ago, I didn't think I was going to see him again. Thankfully, the judge, like, saw all my hard work and has seen through that. So I'm just grateful that I'm even seeing him, you know, not stressed about those other things, like, making it work out, like, it's not like the exact, just making it work out as far as, like, the visit and the thing and the car and making sure he's not going to be freaking out when my dad comes or when I come and,
thank you again for
your shout-out. Thank
you, Stephanie. Dave, you want to share?
Hey, Dave.
Thank you for your share. That was awesome. I can relate in a lot of ways. Really especially like the part about freedom. I talked to my sponsor about it last week, you know, and I talk to him about it all the time. I'm going through my steps again. And I'm in the third part of the fourth step. But when I was in my fear and my resentments, talking to my sponsor about it, you know, and I was like, this doesn't feel like this. It's like, well, how do you feel? Like, I'm getting a sense of freedom, and, you know, and he's like, that's what you're supposed to be getting, you know, and it's exciting. It's like that weight lifted, you know, and I never experienced it. I've had, you know, a few different sponsors, and I guess I never had the open-mindedness and willingness to be honest and thorough. You know, I finally hit that bottom to where I was willing to go to, like I said, go to any lane, you know, to stay sober at any lane. I guess I just had to experience a few other things, you know, a few more times, you know, but I finally hit that spot. I'm hoping, praying, you know, to where I have that freedom and I can stick with it. You know, the new experience. I never really got that new experience. You know, I've had sponsors in the past. I would ask them, do you need a new experience? And it's like, this is a stretch by the time. I don't know what I'm supposed to be, like, feeling or anything, but I'm finally getting it. And I'm finally getting those feelings of the freedom and the new experience and stuff working the steps and stuff. I got a couple of days, you know, I'm coming up on 6 months. And I've been there before, but it's not something I'm going to say again, like, 6 months again. Or a year again, you know, because I've been in those spots. You know, every day is a miracle, you know, to get another day back. I had before, but it's not again. It's I don't know how to explain it. You know, it's a epic process. I'm just enjoying where I'm at in life today. You know, I got a full-time job. You know, like I only get to see my kids, you know, once a week right now. That's a blessing on itself. And know that once God sees me fit, you know, I'll be able to have more. You know, it's just I'm not in that position yet. I'm just enjoying everything I know, the fellowship, the unity, recovery, the new experience, and the freedom that I'm getting today to work this step. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Heather, online, do you want to share?
Heather, if you want to share, you'll have to unmute yourself. You don't have the power to unmute your microphone.
Okay, so we're going to go with Comfy Chair over here. Do you want to share? Yeah.
Okay, I'm definitely out of wallet.
Yeah.
Hey, Danny.
I want to thank you for sharing that. I've been in and out of these rooms for quite longer than I wanted to admit. But I've been through recovery house, same recovery house, three times. But 114 days today. Thank you. I'm going to go down. I tried on my own a million times, and I almost had 1,000 teammates. It only lasted a couple weeks at both. I guess the difference now is I'm willing and open-minded, ready to do this. Book, you know, I'll start from the steps. I believe in my higher power, without, and I could be doing this, but I should say to it. I'm pretty happy. This time since I do my prayers and meditations every morning and even a little bit out of Facebook every day. And things are starting to kind of fall in place, you know. Things will start to come your way. I haven't checked out my new place today. It's awesome. But I got a place to go if I get out of finding. I don't know, you just have to He said, you gotta do what you know is right and order. If you do that, then your higher power is gonna notice and will bring things your way. You can't force it and ask for things for yourself. So that ain't gonna work. Start asking for yourself. Yeah, try to be of service to others and help others. And you can for other people. How was that?
Anything to add?
What about you?
Do you want to be our last one? Oh, yeah. 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. David, thank you for your share. Yeah. Great. This wonderful share. I can identify with you said you wanted to present well, right? As we move forward to you to present well. And same thing is true for me. In spite of the baldness, big nose, and big eyes, I really had a strong need to be everyone's favorite human being, right? And I worked my ass off to be the. And so I can identify with that, and then things weren't working out so well. Oh, poor me. And that, you know, pour me another drink. Right? You also mentioned, if something bothers you, it's a trait that you have towards other people. I think it was not a couple of days ago, but the Friday before last, I had a boss's boss call me, and he kind of chewed me out because, you know, things weren't working out right, and, oh, it bothered me. It just tore me up. And if I look at that, well, as a matter of fact, you know, I've got a couple of guys who, they don't report directly to me, but I was asked, you know, I asked my boss, hey, he's going to help me out on this. And, you know, they aren't doing their stuff. And man, am I ever judgmental towards them, right? Yeah, if it bothers me, it's probably something that I have towards other people. And I wouldn't have learned that. You know, I wouldn't have learned that if I hadn't shown up in these groups. I'm extremely thankful. I'm grateful every morning that I ended up in these rooms because, and you also mentioned, for a decade you tried to quit over and over and over again. My attempts to quit were a shorter timeline, but previous to that, I had always been successful at everything I attempted to do, and if not, it didn't matter anyway. When I could not quit, incomprehensible realization, I that just killed me the power over having enough power to quit. And it did take the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, me getting led to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, said, and as you said, the obsession was lifted. Right? I am so thankful for the sessions. And I probably used more than my 2 minutes. I did. Gave it up all.
Thank you. So I'll turn the meeting back over to our secretary, David.
Thank you. But, let's give her, would we give Pat a round of applause?